interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Tuesday to you. And it is a Tuesday, October 1st edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports. Right back out at Pete's on Johnston and live on 1037 The Game. Ben Love for the next 3 hours. With you, hanging out at Pete's, heck of a life I live. Happy to be here on a Tuesday. The famous Clint D is with me in spirit, but in person inside the 237 Roof Studios, powered by Lafayette Roofing. Big program today, big guest list, and a pretty potent and powerful high school football team that'll be here from 6 until 7 p.m. But we have to lead off with the news of the day, and I think it's going to ring out much beyond the confines of our hub city, the Acadiana area in southwest Louisiana. Raging Cajuns head coach Billy Napier, a contract extension has been announced. The man has coached all of 19 games for the Vermilion and White. And technically speaking, it's only a one-year extension. Let me take you through the devil and the details, and we'll take your calls on this subject. Billy Napier extended in Lafayette, but will he remain in Lafayette? I think it's a healthy discussion we can have, and we're only having it because the program is getting even healthier here in Lafayette. Call me up. Let me know what you think. 706-0111. Napier, named the successor to Mark Hudspeth in 2018. It was a five-year deal at that time. This is tacking on one more additional year. The financial details yet to be released. Napier, unlike Hudspeth, wasn't immediately kind of elevated toward the top of the Sun Belt Conference coaching stratosphere in terms of salary. But I would imagine once some of the financial details are released, we'll see that that is the case for Napier. And then there's going to be the trouble of keeping his staff. But again, these are just the best of problems to have if you're a Raging Cajuns football fan. Napier extended one more year through 2023. Year one, a Western Division championship in the Sun Belt Conference. 7-5 regular season, ended up at 7-7. Year two, don't know that you can ask for much more to the start. 4-1 on the year, 1-0 in conference play. The only loss in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome to Mississippi State. I was there for the ball game. Whether you were or you just watched it on TV, let's be 100% honest with ourselves. The Cajuns and the Bulldogs in the second half, there wasn't a lot of separation between those two teams on the field. Again, football games are 60 minutes in length. The better team for 60 minutes won that football game. My point is the Cajuns weren't dramatically far off the pace for Joe Moorhead and the Bulldogs. And after that, four straight W's, punctuated by Saturday evening's win at Georgia Southern. And suddenly you're looking at wins at Ohio, at Georgia Southern. The Cajuns are set up for a huge ball game against App State a week from tomorrow. Now, the timing of this is perfect by Dr. Brian Maggard and company. I tend to align myself with a lot of things they do because I just like to think I see the angles. But trust me, these cats see it a whole lot better than I do and a whole lot further down the road. And this move was made thinking about what's going to happen down the road because Billy Napier's stock right now is pretty darn high. So what happens if they beat App State, a team that I think we can all fairly say might deserve to be also receiving votes? I'm not going to say top 25, right? I'm not going to give you Homer Radio and say you got to put the Sun Belt at the top, baby. No, but I think App State, which has a proven pedigree of going and playing with the big boys, from beating Michigan back in the Gap in Ann Arbor to beating North Carolina in their backyard earlier this week, North Carolina almost beat the number one team in the country. You get my point. The Cajuns are going to host a borderline top 25, top 30 team a week from tomorrow. Napier and his staff find a way to win that game, Katie bar the door. Everybody's going to come knocking. And this contract extension won't impede anybody's progress of trying to come out and get Billy the Kid. But we predicted this on this show, and I think everybody that was talking Cajuns football, we all predicted this when Napier was hired. It'll be hard to keep him for the life of his contract. Again, the man has coached less than 20 games. Already that contract has been extended. Already this offseason, as Napier told us himself in person on this show, Power 5 programs, NFL franchises have come after some of his assistants and coordinators. These are the best of problems to have. You want a guy who's a rising star. You want to catch him on his way up. Dr. Maggard and company have done exactly that. How long will they keep him? We're going to find out. But today's move, I think, a smart one on behalf of the athletic administration. All right, let's take a trip out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Little Johnny is with us and wants to talk some Cajuns. What's up, Little Johnny?
What's happening, Ben? Listen, man, Napier's good as gone. Cajuns fans need to get used to being the little brother. They ain't going to never be LSU. They ain't going to never keep a good coach. That contract extension could be for 25 years. It don't matter. If somebody comes calling that's better than UL, which don't take much, he's gone. And one more thing, Ben. When they going to fire Will Wade?
Yeah, I knew that train wouldn't be late. Appreciate the call, Little Johnny. I see that very differently than you do. In fact, I see it a lot differently. is Arkansas State a bad program because the likes of Auburn came and poached Gus Malzahn from them, right? The Red Wolves have perennially been a power in the Sun Belt because – I mean, they have coaches that lead the program, and that excellence is sustained after one leaves. And now I think that model program has become App State, right? I mean, coaches that are churned out and moving on to bigger and better things in the Power Five, and that's fine, but it doesn't mean the program that's left behind is any worse for the wear. App State's the best program in this conference still. The whole point, Little Johnny, is that UL – is trying to be that next big player. They want to succeed what was Arkansas State, what is now App State. They want to be the standard bearer. Because guess what? Just because somebody comes and plucks off your tree, well, you might just be next up to get that next excellent coach. You might pluck off the tree below you, or you might go get that next rising star coordinator, kind of like they did this time in Billy Napier, who had been at Bama and Clemson and then Arizona State. So I don't particularly agree with that take, and I hear you. I made some fairly definitive statements about Will Wade based on what I was hearing. I don't know, at this point, maybe about 6-7 months ago, whenever that was, 5-6 months ago, I'll just let that thing play itself out. LSU right now has a head coach, and his name is Will Wade. All right, quickly, we can – okay, Clint said we had one, and now we don't. Yeah, I don't know. The extension for Napier is a good move. Is it going to keep him around? Likely not. Do they have enough money to keep him around – and the rest of his Cracker Jack staff? Likely not. But it's the benchmark that you're setting for the program, right? To me, that's the whole entire point. All right, we do need to get toward our first break. Shea Dixon will join us in the next segment. Scheduling conflicts. Shea D, usually ready to roll at 5. Today he'll be live with us at 4:15. So within the next 4 minutes, we will flip the script, taking his place at straight up 5 o'clock, a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer. Dan McDonald talking Billy Napier's extension, Cajuns versus App State, and a lot more. At 5:45, back to Baton Rouge. Cody Warsham, LSU Sports digital media reporter, will get his take on LSU football, and then the Acadiana High Wrecking Rams with Matt McCullough going to crash the party at Pete's from 6 to 7. So stick with us. Plenty more Bumper to Bumper Sports coming at you on 103.
We're going to do things different.
Can we?
Flip the script.
It's time to flip the script with Shea Dixon on 103.7 The Game.
You know I'll flip.
It's a beautiful thing. Doesn't matter if it's the 4 o'clock hour or it's straight up 5 o'clock. Anytime we bring on Shea Dixon of Go247.com, give him the reins of the show, typically things get more entertaining. Shea, how the heck are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Benjamin, how are you doing today?
Life is good. I'm about to have the Acadiana High Wrecking Rams. And so as much LSU football as you and I have covered over the years, a whole lot of talent's going, I think, east, right, on I-10 and going from Acadiana High to LSU.
Oh, absolutely. Acadiana High to a lot of places. So, yeah, you're in good company over there at the Wrecking Rams.
Well, hit me with your best today. What you got?
Well, we're going to go a little heavy. We've been so team heavy and talking LSU football, but the news of the week, and you may have already talked about it a bit, but I'm hitting you with my questions of everything that's come out of California and the name, image, likeness, and moving towards players getting a cut of obviously going to school, but also, you know, schools and everybody else marketing them. So if it's cool, if you're game, I'll just rapid fire some questions.
Let's do it.
All right, let's rock. Off top, this one gets tossed around a lot, so this is just a basic one. You've worked in, obviously, radio. You know how ad spots work. Let's say Hollingsworth, you know, Ford in Baton Rouge says, Joe Burrow, we want you to be our official sponsor. We're going to pay you $30,000 for the year, and you're going to come out and do one show up, meet and greet, and you're going to be on our commercials. Are you cool with that? It has nothing to do with the university. They pay him. Kind of no real compliance involved. Is that an okay thing?
I don't know that I'm quite kosher with that. And my gut tells me that's not the way this thing ends up playing out. I think, for lack of a better analogy to give your brother, I think the pimp's always going to take a cut. And so what I believe is that somehow, some way, the NCAA, the university / athletic department, they'll get theirs, and a lot like a commissioned sales agent, I think Joe Burrow, in this example, would get his on the back end. How do you split that pie? What are the percentages? I don't pretend to have a clue. But what I do know is it's more than Joe Burrow was getting. And what I do know is it opens the door up for, say, if Burrow becomes a first-round draft pick that probably not Hollingsworth Ford, but maybe on a national level, right, that Southern Quality Ford dealers, who knows, if he's playing it in New Orleans or Atlanta, then maybe they have a tie. And maybe he's got an easy in for some advertising money for life after college. So I could see a lot of ways in which that kind of could play itself out. But it is hard for me to imagine that there's direct contact from the, in this case, the advertising entity and then the player. Hard to believe that they're going to be allowed to be like the Wild Wild West and maybe even solicit these types of advertisements and then take 100% of the cut. Nothing about the history of the NCAA or intercollegiate athletics tells me that that's the way this will end up.
Okay, these two get tossed around a lot, so I'll ask you kind of them lumped together, and they're different. But if they're selling my jersey, Joe Burrow's jersey, in the gift shop, should I be getting a cut of that? Should I be getting, you know, not the whole thing, obviously, because they're printing and making the jerseys, but should I be involved in that, right? If I'm Joe Burrow, should I be getting something? And then the flip side, which we've seen a lot of players do this the second they graduate, should I be able to be in college? And if I want to sign autographs for money at the local Walmart, shouldn't I be able to do it?
I'm very okay with the first one. The second one's a little bit murkier waters, but I'm not going to say I'm completely against it. Here's where people get around that whole jersey thing and the image license thing, and I'm interested to see how this plays out. LSU can literally float out, and they do, that number 7 jersey. No, that's not Burt Jones. It's not Tyrann Mathieu. It's not Pat Peterson. It's not DJ Chark. It's not Grant Delpit. It's just the number 7. So then all of a sudden, how do you address that? But I do think if there's a jersey number and a name that's on the back, there's no question that Joe Burrow, in this case, again, should get a percentage cut of that. So the autographs thing, that gets weird for me again, because then that opens up avenues for brother-in-laws and backyard deals to be done. Hey, come sign this, and here's how much we're going to say you get per autograph, and then it's all going to come to you underneath the table. So that feels like it puts you back in the path of unsavory types, but maybe I am completely underestimating the slimy underbelly that is the autograph world.
Yeah, and maybe we move towards that one day, where because they don't do it now, but if we're going diving deep into it, then maybe, you know, you go into the gift shop one day and the jersey says Burrow on the back, or says, you know, whoever on the back while they're still in college. We'll see. Then we're kind of going out of order here, but this one must be fit in. Are they, who's on the side, and are you on the side, or can you see the side of we're fine. They're getting enough. And not just tuition, but room and board and free food and free books and free medical care for any time you ever get injured. Don't worry about it. We've got you covered. We're flying you charter to every game, or, you know, we're getting you to every game. You've got unlimited access to everything you would need. You get a monthly stipend in cash to pay whatever, your energy bill, and go out and, you know, have fun, go to the movies, buy some golf clubs, fix your ATV, whatever you do. Do we need to mess with it? Is it fine right now? Are we taking advantage of anybody?
This is where it gets tough, because I understand the old guard that says, hey, they are getting everything that you just listed, Shay. And here's the thing. Even since that old guard was shouting that rhetoric off the rooftop, we've added, like you mentioned, the stipend, right? The cost of attendance. And that came up in this neck of the woods when Billy Napier and company strongly encouraged, at first I think the word was mandate, but they strongly encouraged their players to donate at least $50 toward the Raging Cajuns Athletic Foundation. And I had a lot of people tell me that are very close to collegiate athletics, Ben, when you really break down the numbers of how much money these kids get in the modern era with the cost of attendance, they've got more disposable income than a lot of people imagine. This isn't 2000. This isn't even 2015. It's a different day. So what I would tell you, Shay, is we have taken steps in the right direction. That being said, where I personally stand, I think they deserve more than what they're currently getting. But in no way, shape, or form, in my opinion, should this thing ever be carte blanche. And don't give me the argument that tennis players and soccer players and gymnasts, they have the opportunity to get their endorsements at 14 and 15 because their sports generates studs younger and the window to play is just, it skews younger. I don't think that applies here. You can't let this be carte blanche in the Wild West, because you can't have not just advertising entities, you can't have unsavory types hooking up deals with the third string safety at LSU because he goes to a power high school, and if you give him a lot of money, maybe his younger brother comes. Maybe the next cat comes. It can't be completely unfettered, but I think they probably deserve a little more than they're getting now. And then maybe, just maybe selfishly, Shay, if they do this, we will all be playing EA Sports College Football sometime before the year 2030.
Well, that's the first thing they have to bring back, right, is immediately that. That makes the most sense. Just give everybody $500 and we're using your stuff on the game. Whatever it might be. And this is a deep question. You don't have to go forever because we don't have forever. And but is there a worry, and let's say the NFL, they get it, right? Like Drew Brees makes infinitely more money than the starting right guard or whoever, you know, whatever situation you're in. But if it's let's use the Burrow example. If it's LSU, if LSU's starting quarterback is making 30 to 50 grand off endorsement deals at local dealerships or whatever, and it's legal in a year, does it cause dissension in the ranks? I'm not even talking about other sports, but does the, you know, right guard on the team who says, well, I start in every game too, I protect him, I go to every practice, I go to every film study, I'm not marketable, so where does that leave me? Is that sort of an unintended consequence that you kind of have to worry about when you're moving into amateur sports?
I see it as being almost a negligible consequence. I see it as very little consequence, if anything. And you know better than me, Shay, because of how often you've covered recruiting and at high levels, even at kind of mid-major type levels. So many of these kids think that they are going to play NFL football one day. When they're in high school, they think that way. All right, big boy, you get to college, you play right guard, and your quarterback makes more than you. Get used to it if, again, you want to play in the NFL. Now, the other side of that, which I think warrants a little bit of discussion. How often do we hear the stories about the starting quarterback taking his offensive line out for dinner, buying them Rolexes? So suddenly, again, everything you would think is to scale. I think there are opportunities for some of these star players, the ones that are making more scratch, to not necessarily give back Robin Hood style, but I think they've got an opportunity to show their love and kind of operate a lot like the NFL does. So if you're moving out of amateurism and taking a step into professional waters, you've got to be able to deal with some of this. I know we're talking about 18 to 22-year-olds, but if they think they're going to be pros when they're 16, well, they better get used to it when they are in that age range.
And this one, last one for you, and I think it circle back to kind of just the understanding of amateurism versus professionalism, and we'll think of the big three here, sports. In basketball, these guys, what? If they're one and done, they know that, hey, I'm on campus 8 months. I'm really just going to kind of craft my game, put some more tape out there, up my stock. But I know that I'm a lottery pick, or that I'm going in the first couple of rounds, or that I'm coming out and not going to college long. And the other sports are stuck, right? They're in it for at least a few years. So will there ever be a revisit? And where are you at? Should football and baseball be more like basketball? Should basketball be more like football and baseball? Or should there be no real rules? Should you be able to go to college, and whenever I want to turn pro, I get to turn pro?
Well, I don't have a lot of time left in the segment, but I'll tell you quickly, that's not always up to the NCAA. The NBA is pushing this one-and-done rule down the college basketball world's throat, and so you have to contend with that this isn't always at your mercy. If just because you're the governing organization of intercollegiate sports, the professional league gets to dictate their terms. You got to be 19. You got to be 1 year removed from high school, 3 years removed. So you're always going to have to kind of be in compliance with that. That's one thing I'd mention here.
It's interesting stuff. We're going to have to revisit this all later, because I see that now Florida, legislators are trying to push bills through. I think that this is going to, as quickly as we saw all the transfer portal stuff happen, Ben, I'm wondering how quickly this stuff happens with. And I know it's California says 2023 is when it'll begin, but how many other people line up to kind of get on board with that? Hey, in a few years, let's be doing the same thing.
Fascinating conversation. Shay, I got to hit a break. Thanks for always. You are the man. We'll be right back in. Time for your sink or swim question of the day. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're live from Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Still with you, chilling, live at Pete's on Johnston. And I'm glad that Shay Dixon went there with Flip the Script. Something we hadn't really touched on with any real thought and depth on the program. The legislation that's being put forth in California is set to take effect by 2023. There was an interview earlier today on this station, if you heard it, Dan Patrick with the governor of the state of California, and I thought it was superb. This is a guy that played some college baseball in the state of California, had some pretty pointed thoughts of what might happen if Dr. Mark Emmert and the NCAA don't fall in line with some of this. Anyway, if you heard it, you know what I'm talking about. If not, I'll try to dip back into those waters later in the program. But if you want to share your thoughts on the state of amateurism in collegiate sports, or you want to react to the news of the day locally, Billy Napier, Raging Cajun's football head coach, gets a one-year extension on his contract now through 2023. Call us up. We got time for you. 706-0111. Speaking of the Cajuns, our next scheduled guest, Dan McDonald, a Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer, at straight up 5 o'clock. But it's about that time. Every single day, we throw a question your way. And after the music, I think I'll do just that.
Love, exciting and new.
Your sink or swim question of the day, which is seeming more likely at the moment? Is it A, the Saints making the Super Bowl, or B, LSU making the college football playoff? Again, the number, we'd love you to weigh in on this. We got some good response going on social media, but you can be a part of the show and answer it. 706-0111. Saints crashing the Super Bowl, LSU making the Final Four of football. Which seems more likely to you today on the first day of October? Clint, lead us off.
For me, Ben, I think the situation that seems more likely at this point in time is LSU making the college football playoff. And I think a lot of it has to do, again, with the fact that we're talking about right here, right now, with everything that's in place, what you have, and you're kind of also not sure about how long the recovery process might take for Drew Brees. Some are saying 5, some are saying 6, some are saying 8. What's going to happen during this stretch run after the first two games with Teddy Bridgewater at the helm, especially with the Tampa Bay Bucks, and we saw what they did over the weekend. To me, I feel like LSU making the college football playoff seems more of a likely possibility, at least right now.
I agree with you. I do think the answer is LSU making the CFP. And there are a lot of reasons behind that. The Texas win, as I continue to scream out on this program, that buys LSU so much rope this year, truly. Now you have an opportunity to stumble once and still get where you need to go. I don't know that you could stumble twice. Depends on who you would stumble against, right? If you lose a squeaker at home to Auburn, then maybe A&M, but you sandwich in between a win in Tuscaloosa, maybe. But I'm not sure you could stumble twice. But I think you could stub your toe once. So not just the rope due to the win in Austin. The way Joe Burrow is playing has to give everybody confidence. If you've got the best quarterback doing it, you've always got a shot. Is Burrow definitely the best? Hard to say. We all believed that guy was Trevor Lawrence coming into the season. His sophomore follow-up has been kind of tough to live up to the freshman season he had, especially the end of it, but he hasn't hit that mark yet. Tua Tagovailoa, couple of weeks where he kind of was laying in the weeds, relatively speaking, and then he absolutely exploded in the win over Ole Miss on Saturday. But Burrow certainly is up there with all those guys, with Justin Fields at Ohio State. I mean, with all of them that are putting up major digits right now. So I think that there's a lot of reason to think pro-LSU in this argument. But, Clint, you're right. There is the one that maybe is a deterrent for the Saints, and that's Breeze, his availability. But I do think the more they continue to win, the more that gives some leash to when they have to bring him back. You know that Nine's going to want to play as soon as humanly possible, and I still would bet money that it's at Atlanta the first Sunday in November. Still seems likely to me. Miss six games, get a seventh during the bye week as more breathing room. That makes the most sense. Of course, I don't know exactly how that thumb is coming along right now. All we know is what we hear in the press conferences and then what we see on the sideline. But my gut tells me Breeze plays at Atlanta to start back. That being said, Clint, this one isn't a runaway decision for me. So anybody else wants to weigh in, we got time for you. 706-0111. It's not a runaway decision. And the question actually came to mind for me because of the fact that the Saints have recently won at Seattle and then versus the Cowboys. Now I think you have to have all the cards on the table and possibilities, options on the table for Who Dat Nation that you did in August. I see no reason why not. Everything that was possible before the season still seems that way to me. Again, they make it three in a row and beat the suddenly hot Tampa Bay Bucks, at least hot on offense. This might become even more interesting of a question. Let's get out now to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Frank, welcome back in. Which way are you leaning?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to say not LSU, but has anybody noticed the Saints defense? I mean, these guys are for real. I think what Tampa Bay did to the Rams, I think that's a blip on the radar. I think that was flash in the pan. I think actually the Rams overlooked Tampa Bay. I don't think Tampa Bay is that good. But I like both teams to go as far as they can take themselves.
I think the Saints right now, last week at this time, we were wondering aloud on the show, Frank, are they a top 10 team in football? I kind of thought, yeah. Now I think it's fair to say if you just take the quarterback position out, this might be a top 5 or 6 team in football. But then when you add back the all-important quarterback position and they get their guy back, they're right back where we thought they were. But even without him, I think we're learning they're awfully prepared for battle on Sundays. And so I think that they've gained some ground in this conversation, but I would lean toward LSU.
I'm kind of leaning toward LSU, but I'm not going to take the Saints out of the picture simply because, I mean, this Elliott was supposed to be the number one quote-unquote running back in the league. The dude didn't even make 40 yards. That says something about your defense.
No question. And the Saints haven't allowed a 100-yard rusher. I want to say I heard the stat the other day that it's 20-plus, maybe even in the low 30s of games. It's something pretty remarkable. So this defense under Dennis Allen coming to form. Frank, it's great to hear from you.
Too easy, Ben.
too easy. And we got time for you. You can make it easy on us. Give us your best take here. Saints making the Super Bowl, LSU making the college football playoff, first day of October. Which seems more likely to you? We'll let you have more time at it on the other side of the break, and we'll get you the social media reaction. As we head into the final break of the hour, we've got an opportunity for you to win a pair of tickets to see Rock and Roll Hall of Famers Hart, as well as Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. You want to get in it to win it? It's free. Just text Ann, A-N-N, Ann, to 68683 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see everyone involved this Saturday at the Cajun Dome. Once again, just text Ann to 68683, and you'll be entered to win a pair of tickets to see Hart, as well as Joan Jett and the Hart, the Blackhearts, this Saturday at the Cajun Dome. Hart, Joan Jett, Blackhearts, trying to tongue twist me there. We'll be right back at it. More Bumper to Bumper Sports live for Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
More life on the...
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
I love them. I don't really like sitting in my room watching all the other games, waiting for our time to come at night. I like getting up at 7, 8, eating breakfast, going to play the game. That's my favorite part.
Joe Burbank loves those 11 a.m. starts. Might just be the Big Ten in him. Perhaps that part hasn't left yet. Was used to playing in some of those games, right? Or at least his team was playing in those games on ABC in the late morning with the Buckeyes. We asked you during the last segment, which seems more likely at the moment? Is it the Saints making the Super Bowl or LSU making the college football playoff? We can keep taking your calls at 706-0111. Clint said LSU. Yours truly said LSU. Frank called in. He said it's probably LSU, but you don't rule the Saints out. I like that way of thinking about it. How about some good response via Facebook right now? Amy S. Gotta love it here. I'm going with the Saints making the Super Bowl. If Bridgewater could just keep holding the tail steady while the defense continues to carry them, we'll be all right by the time Breeze is back. Jamie G. agrees with Amy. Gotta say the Saints. LSU still has to face Florida, Auburn, and Bama. Remember, the last time LSU beat Bama, Miley Cyrus was still Hannah Montana. And that is awfully sobering. I'm at a place right now where I can not only see the bar, I'm like a coin's toss away from the bar at Pete's on Johnston. That thought alone might drive me toward the bar here in the 5 o'clock hour break. I know this, the last time LSU beat Bama, I was there, and it was in Tuscaloosa. And I continue to be one of the only people that I know that feels like LSU's better chances to beat Bama these days are on the road in Tuscaloosa. And I've been pretty keen on the fact that this game had been angling toward a 2:30 kickoff in T-Town. And look, I get it, right? LSU's got four game dates between now and then. Three of the four. In fact, it's three in a row after this weekend. Our SEC affairs, right? You're going to play Florida at home, Mississippi State on the road, Auburn at home. Two of those teams currently are in the top 10. But I'll share this with you. They play each other this weekend in Gainesville. And wouldn't you know it, the road team, Auburn, is a favorite. I'm excited to pick that one tomorrow with Cousin Dino. I've got some pretty pointed thoughts on that ball game. But one of those teams almost certainly will be out of the top 10, maybe even both of them. Doesn't mean that they're not capable of beating LSU if they have a hiccup. But I think LSU is going to be okay heading toward that Bama game. But it's very intriguing, the idea that maybe suddenly this becomes a 7 o'clock kickoff at Tuscaloosa. If CBS does what, in fact, they have in the past, negotiate with the mothership to get a second primetime game to follow up Georgia Notre Dame from a couple of weeks ago. All right, let's take a trip out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. Mike is with us. Mike, you want to talk LSU and Saints? Hit us.
Hey, what's going on, man?
Man, just having some fun on a Tuesday.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. Hey, I just called to say that I'm gonna go back into the past. Maybe I might be wrong for doing this, but you got to realize the last 2 years, rightfully, you can kind of say we should have been in the Super Bowl for the we should have made the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. So I'm going to go on that on that gesture and then say that it's going to be third time is going to be the charm. I think we're going to make it to the Super Bowl this year. We should have been in the last 2 years, actually. It wouldn't have been for these crazy little things that happened. But the third time is going to be the charm, and we've gone all the way. Who that lives on. Thank you.
There you go. And I'll add to Mike's point. Because Teddy Ballgame is helping the Saints to win some games, it's mainly the defense and special teams, but still Bridgewater is helping to kind of right the ship, at least somewhat. Because he is doing that, because they're winning some games in the interim, it is entirely possible this injury to Breeze becomes the best thing that ever happened to the New Orleans Saints. I know that I'm trying to see the forest through the trees with this. I know that I am. Trust me when I tell you I acknowledge that. But if he comes back completely right from this thumb injury and he's not undergone 10, 12 straight weeks of throwing 35 to 40 times a game, he might just have the best shoulder, elbow combination in terms of health and arm strength that he has had in the month of December into January in who knows how freaking long. That's a potential silver lining. We're not there yet, right? Because the Saints have to keep winning games. Breeze has to keep rehabbing and has to come back like the number nine we remember. But to Mike's point, that's not out of the realm of possibility, that the Saints quarterback is back and stronger than ever down the stretch run, and then maybe, just maybe the third time could be a charm. All right, let's get back out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Tony, thank you for waiting on us. Give us your take on the sink or swim question.
You have to go with the Saints because if LSU makes the playoffs, it's based upon the opinion of a board of people, regardless of the records, because they could be tied with other schools with the same record. Whereas the Saints go, it's based upon purely the record. And I think the Saints' record should get them in the playoffs.
That's fair. I appreciate the call, Tony.
All right, thanks. All right, bye.
So let's analyze that a little bit. And we could take one, maybe two more. 706-0111. Clint, you and I both started slight lean toward LSU. Basically everybody that has called in or has submitted a response via Facebook, they are dissenting from us. Actually, we're in the minority. We're dissenting from them. The point made by Tony is valid. But here's where I may just throw in a little bit of a monkey wrench. You're right. Completely correct, Tony, that it would be subjective and up to a college football playoff committee, no doubt. And there's human error. There are human biases that occur there, whether they say that exists or not. We all recognize that because, of course, we're all human. But here's the thing. I think LSU stands a chance to be on the good side of that. And I won't say that they've been on the bad side of it before. I know that everybody wanted LSU to play Oklahoma State instead of Alabama January 9, 2012. I understand that. It went poorly with the rematch in the Big Easy. I was there. I remember. But LSU hasn't necessarily gotten the bad end of these things before. 07, LSU got in based off of a whole lot of opinion as a two-loss team. LSU fans get a little bent to go full-out Jim Rome on you because Bama gets the benefit of the doubt when it gets really subjective. I guess that's been my point ever since the Texas win. I think LSU has put itself in a position with a shiny, sparkling, big-number, highly productive quarterback and a win like they scored on the road at Texas. I think they've bought themselves some leash that even if this thing becomes subjective, LSU's got a chance to do this year what Bama has done twice in this decade. I called that shot before the season started, and I'm not even remotely backing off of it now. I think a one-loss LSU team, especially that only loss is to Bama, that doesn't play in Atlanta, gets into the college football playoff. I still feel that way. But I can't say Tony is wrong. Because the Saints, hey, you beat who's in front of you, you got the healthiest and the hottest team at the right time, that's the name of any kind of playoffs. It's not the best team that wins the Super Bowl, the World Series, the NBA title. You think the Raptors are better than the Warriors? Come on now. Healthy and hot. That's the name of the game. The Saints, to Tony's point, they get healthy with Breeze. They get hot. Right time of the year. Schedule doesn't exactly end roughly in terms of the strength of it, they could absolutely be that team. For LSU, it's a different situation. You can play your way in if you get to Atlanta and you win that game. That's the only way to play your way in and leave no doubt. The SEC champion in Atlanta will never be left out of this four-team situation. And if all we're ever thinking of in the future is expansion, if there's eight teams, the SEC champ is definitely not getting left out, even more so. But it's an interesting conversation so far. Appreciate the calls in our opening hour. We'll have more time for your takes in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll also have interviews with Dan McDonald in about 5 minutes and Cody Worsham at 5:45. And do not forget the Acadiana High Wrecking Rams. It's their power hour, the prep power hour, starring Matt McCullough and company from 6 to 7. Before we get there, CD, let's wind down hour number one with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Case. Right now, a lot of people are making a strong case that former LSU Tiger Alex Bregman should be the MVP of the American League. And as much fun as the conversation is, Verlander, Cole for the Cy Young, this one's going to get intriguing as well. Mike Trout, who I think we all recognize as the better player over the last 5 to 7 years, but he also didn't play the last 2 weeks of the season. Bregman was certainly the catalyst offensively in the field that led the Stros to the best record in baseball. So a lot of people able to make a strong case that Bregs deserves the hardware. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We'll be right back in with Dan McDonald. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour 2 of 3 underway. Ben Love right back out to Pete's on Johnston. Glad to have you. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. And quickly, we're going to bring aboard to lead off this hour one of our favorite guests aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. It's Dan McDonald, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Famer. Dan, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Ben. After that last weekend with just about everybody winning that we sort of wanted and needed to win, it was a great weekend.
You've had two straight road weekends. The Cajuns win at Ohio, and they were underdogs going into that game in Athens, Ohio, and then beating a rival in Georgia Southern and doing it pretty convincingly in Statesboro. How do you sum up the way that Napier and company summoned the courage and, frankly, I mean, even were dominant last weekend?
Oh, I don't think there's any question that 37-24 score was not anywhere indicative of how lopsided that game was. Anybody who watched that game, you didn't have to know a lot about football to figure out who the best team was and who the best team was by a wide margin. And if anybody goes back and fact checks me, they may go back and look at our preseason advocate football tab and football information. I had to pick game by game in that one, and I had the Cajuns losing both those road games. I had them losing at Ohio and at Georgia Southern. So right now, I have them 2-3, and they're 4-1. So they're sort of playing with house money right now. But
I had them in the same spot. I had them at 2-3, but then winning both games in October. How manageable is that, understanding how good App State is?
That's going to be a test. That is really, I think, the litmus test for this team. And we've been saying that for 2 weeks, and honestly. I think a lot of people have been impressed with what they've done the last couple of weeks. Can they keep that up against a team the level of Appalachian State? If they play well, certainly they can. Appalachian State may be the best team they're going to play, I mean, if you look at the polls, you know, they may be the best team they're going to play from here on out and maybe all the way back to the start of the season. They're getting a lot of votes in both the polls. I think they would be, they'd be 29th in the AP poll if they went down past the 25 and, you know, may jump up again next week, depending on what happens in some of the teams toward the lower end of the poll. But they are as, they're easily as talented as anybody that the Cajuns will play. But the way this team's playing right now, I'm not going to put anything past them. I'll be real interested to see what the line is when it comes out, because anybody who has watched this team very closely, you know, you can see they're playing so much better defensively, not just compared to last year, but from the start of this season. And that offense is just a machine right now.
Talking with the great Dan McDonald on 103.7 The Game. You took the words out of my mouth. Defensively, Ron Roberts' group, I mean, they look night and day from 2018. What's been the most noticeable leap in improvement for you?
I think it's just, you know, they brought in some new guys. Not that many, but a few in some key positions. Some guys that they had that sort of redshirted last year and only played some last year are playing an awful lot more this year. But I think a lot of it, and, you know, it sounds almost cliche, but it's communication. They don't get called out of position an awful lot. There's always somebody there, and that was so obvious against Georgia Southern. When the Eagles would run their option, I mean, 9 times out of 10, 95 times out of 100, there's somebody there. You know, I enjoyed reading one thing that was on one of the papers in the Statesboro area that said it looked like Georgia Southern's running backs, with the exception of the quarterback Shea Wirtz, Georgia Southern's running backs would run 2 yards and then look for someplace to fall down. Well, that's because there wasn't any place for them to go.
It's incredible. The way they're playing defensively is going to give them a chance against anybody. Let's circle back, Dan, to that App State game. What type of crowd do you think this area can generate? I know it's a Wednesday night, but considering the magnitude of the game, you're coming off a bye week, the Napier extension, which we will talk about, can they finally pack that place out?
Oh, I mean, I would hope so. I think a packed house might be a little bit of a pipe dream, but I'm just hoping that people will come out. I mean, you know, to be honest, they're out of excuses. You know, play good football. Well, they're doing that right now. You know, make the experience fan friendly. I mean, you can get a $1 hot dog and a $2 beer. You know, there are ways to get tickets that you won't break the bank, general admission, in good seats. Those lower seats in that upper deck, that's my favorite seats in the whole stadium. And there are ticket options out there. The university has been over backwards to try to improve the what they call the fan experience. You know, and now you got a chance to play on national television. You got a chance to showcase your program, showcase your town, showcase your whole area. People, you're out of excuses. There's nothing else you can say that would say why I'm not going to go out to Cajun Field.
Dan, what do you make out of the extension? I think it's something that they almost had to do, and yet at the same time, I can't imagine if the opportunity down the line for Napier is great enough that he won't at least consider it.
Well, you're exactly right. You know, if a Power Five conference calls him, you know, he has no options, and it would be, and I think that would be a feather in the cap of the program here. This, I think, is part of, you know, not only do they want to express how happy they are with the way the program is going, the way it's building, and the class that they've shown. You know, there were some issues in this program 2 or 3 years ago, off the field issues. I think that, you know, this might be a strike to prevent a Southern Mississippi, an SMU, Memphis. You know, that might still be out there, but you know, if you know you've got support here, and now you've got your financial package, you're financially secure for a while. You know, if one of those types comes along out of the American Conference, something like that, out of I don't know if he would be interested in a Mountain West position, but you know, something out of the American, which is sort of that in-between league right now. They like to build themselves as the sixth of the Power Five. But I think this might be something to sort of stem that tide, just in case that did happen.
We're coming down the stretch with Dan McDonald. Again, Bumper to Bumper Sports live for Pete's on Johnston. Dan, I've been trying to impress the point upon our listeners that it's not a bad thing if your head coach gets poached. It hasn't been a bad thing for Arkansas State in the recent past. It's not a bad thing for App State now that it's happening. If you're recruiting the best talent, that's not just the players, it's the coaches. You'll continue to get opportunities to lead what might become the premier program in the Sun Belt. So I think we're putting the cart ahead of the horse that Napier is definitely leaving. But even if he did, to your point, it could only be a feather in the cap of the program, right?
Well, I fully think so. You know, if you've done everything that you can possibly do and that he gets an offer that is an outstanding offer from, you know, somebody in an ACC program, in any of the other Power Five leagues and so forth, you know, you pat him on the back and say, congratulations, thanks for doing what you did here, you know, how much we appreciate it. They have raised the level of this job. Will they get quality? And again, we're putting the cart like a mile ahead of the horse right now. But if that happens, they're going to get applicants for this job that would have not even looked at this a few years ago. I think, you know, is there another Billy Napier out there? We don't know. But there's probably somebody very similar, very much that mode, that style, that sort of leader that can keep your program right there where it is. And that also, you know, new guy comes in, you know, you can't cut back the financial investment you've already put in it. You're going to keep it the way it is. You may even upgrade it if you have the right applicant and the right candidate. You know, if that all happens, you know, it can only be a positive.
And right now, certainly a positive time to be a Raging Cajun fan. You've been having fun doing those broadcasts, especially on the road, Dan?
I've been having a ton of fun. It's you get to be around it, and it sort of forces you to look and do your homework and find the little tidbits and find the little things to sort of enhance what you're trying to do. Hey, I never claim to be a pro at that, but I try to have fun with it, and I hope that people who listen have fun with it. And I always try to find them a couple little nuggets that maybe they, you know, maybe they don't have anywhere else. You know, I'm going to tell them that of the last 19 possessions that Louisiana has had offensively, not counting kneel downs, they've scored touchdowns 16 times. You know, I want to tell them that. You know, I want to tell them those little tidbits out there. I want to tell them that Jacques Boudreau has 33 tackles and nobody else has even got 20 this year. Kind of tells you how he's playing. But you know, those little things you try to, you know, dig up, try to find, and try to get out there. That's what I have fun with.
Your mind is a steel trap, my friend. I think you've retained those stats well. Thank you for sharing them, and thanks for sharing some time with us, Dan. You know I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, man.
Dan McDonald. That's wonderful, too. The opportunity to get kind of embedded with that program that he has spent so much time around, and I know he's having a whole lot of fun doing those TV broadcasts. All right, we're coming up on the end of, not that interview, but we're coming up at the end of some of our dedicated Raging Cajuns talk, because I want to leap forward and get into the Saints. I do want to get to a touch of MLB wildcard conversation, and then we're throwing shade today on a couple of different fronts. What one beer vendor attempted to pull off, and he kind of did at first, what he attempted to pull off at a Dolphins game recently will blow your mind. We'll have that with Shade in about 16 minutes. So don't go anywhere. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back out to Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
Hey, all Houston Astros fans. 103.7 The Game wants to send you and a friend to cheer on the Astros as they open up the Major League Baseball postseason at Minute Maid Park with the American League Division Series. You can win a pair of tickets to games 1 and 2 of the ALDS on Friday and Saturday, October 4th and 5th, along with a one-night hotel stay. Just text TAKE IT BACK to 68683 for your chance to watch your Houston Astros take it back. The Houston Astros playoff giveaway is brought to you by Cordell D'Artes State Farm Insurance Agent.
and 103.7 The Game. Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
If there isn't a game that goes by that you're not upset with timing of something or a call that you would have wanted, or that was just one more significant at the end of the game, that the thinking there needs to be, and it was let's get, you know, the yards we can on a play, protect the field position, and kick a field goal at worst, and make it a touchdown game. And, it ended up taking us out of scoring position. That's not good.
Saints coach Sean Payton, not a game that goes by, he tells you there that he leaves unfrustrated by what happened and what unfolded. And specifically, he's alluding to that Teddy Bridgewater sack. But still, the Saints got the dub. They are 3-1. And we'll talk a little bit to Houdat Nation here. Back in to Pete's on Johnston. Plenty more B2BS to go. Cody Warsham will join us in about 25 minutes. Between now and then, we've got some time for your phone calls, especially if you want to talk Saints football. 706-0111. I find it interesting, Clint. We opened up our sink or swim question in the 4 o'clock hour, and we asked folks, which is seeming more likely today, first day of October, Saints making the Super Bowl, LSU making the college football playoff. Virtually all of our online and over-the-air call-in response has been Saints making the Super Bowl. If they're going to keep this thing at 5-3 or better before the bye week, the defense will have to keep doing what it does, and the special teams will continue to be at the top of league rankings, right? Not just Will Lutz, Thomas Morstead, the suddenly potent punt return game. But I think there's a good chance that that can happen. In fact, right now, I'm feeling really good about 5-3, and I'm not willing to take 6-2 off the table. And the defense certainly, I think, is the biggest reason why. Let's get you some more from Sean Payton. You heard him there talking about the Bridgewater sack and his frustration there, but you know he's excited when it comes to the way that Von Bell played, and it started right out of the gate for the former Ohio State Buckeye.
I thought last year was a good season for him, and I think Kurt Coleman coming in, there was some experience, obviously some competition, but nonetheless a veteran player, and I think we began to see that last year.
I think somebody tried to merge in on the conference call there with Sean Payton. Let's take a trip out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Max is with us and wants to talk Saints. How are you, Max?
Doing good. So just to touch on the Cajuns real quick, because your last guest, he said they've done everything correct. The one thing they still need to fix is there's nowhere that you can just go pop a tent and tailgate at Raging Cajun Field. There's just not. You have to pay all kinds of money to the RCAF and everything else. They fix that, they'll fix a lot of their problems. They've done good and everything else. But I was at the Saints game this weekend, and I'm glad I wasn't watching it on TV. Watching it on TV probably would have been heartbreaking and just frustrating. But being in the dome, you get to cheer for all of the defensive stands that they made, which made the game a lot more entertaining. I think if something happens in this next game and Bridgewater doesn't show some progression, that if we're trailing at halftime, I could definitely see old Swiss Army knife coming out at behind the center after half if that happens.
And that would be interesting. Max, appreciate the take on both fronts. Thanks, man. I have been tailgating and attending Cajuns games into my third season now. My wife and I went for the tickets, and he is right. You want to park within shouting distance, you know, without having to pay the whatever it is, 10, 15, 20 bucks a game, yep, you're going to shell out to the RCAF. You want to pop the tent, as he said. Yeah, it's kind of similar as well. So are they treating – I could tell you this. Having worked in media for a while, this is, I believe, the 121st ranked market in the country in terms of size. Are the powers that be treating it as if it's bigger? I think that they are. Is that going to hold? Is that going to work? I think that it can if the winning happens at a high enough clip. I think people will shell out for the tents, but Max, your point at least is well taken. Clint, what do you make out of the other thing that Max had to say as we flip it over toward the Saints? He said that in person, rooting for defensive stands and being part of the mob inside of the dome was worth being there. But if you had to watch that game on TV, he thinks it might have been a little more frustrating. Well, I did watch it on TV, and there was a whole lot of frustration. But I'll tell you, the defensive energy, it still coursed through my veins all the way in Lafayette and watching it over TV.
I think whenever you're at just any game period, regardless if it's a defensive stand, if it's defensive standoff like we saw on Sunday Night Football, or if it was more along the lines of what we saw last year on Monday Night Football between the Rams and the Chiefs, where they're both putting up like video game numbers, I think anytime you're just there, there's a different vibe going on. You're going to wind up feeling a lot better about a lot of different things that are going on. When you're watching a game at home and you see all the different angles and you see a lot of the more, when you see like 20 different replays of the same play, eventually you get frustrated at a lot of the poor performances and you get to nitpick a lot more, as opposed to when you're live, you see things as they happen.
CD, we're bouncing around, but that's the way I intended it for this segment. It's kind of how I do my entire show. I guess I'm learning that about myself. 4.5 years in, let's talk a little bit of Major League Baseball playoffs. They technically start tonight. They're really going to begin in earnest on Thursday when the Cards take on the Braves from SunTrust Park in Marietta. But quickly, and we need to go lightning round style here, give me your picks. Brewers at Nationals tonight. Brandon Woodruff against Max Scherzer. Who you got?
I got to go with the Milwaukee Brewers. The Brew Crew, I feel like, is going to get the win here. It'll be a lot to do with the offensive output that they have been putting together late in the season. I think I got to go with the Brew Crew on this one.
I'm absolutely taking the Nationals, and they are close to 2-1 favorites by Vegas. I'm going to go with the best pitcher in Max Scherzer. A little surprise pick there from CD right out of the gate. Let's go to the AL wild card game. This one will be played tomorrow, and now we know who the A's are throwing. They're going with Sean Manea. Manea injured for a good chunk of this season. He actually was involved with a trade, if I'm not mistaken, that the Astros made back in the day. But now Manea will be opposite of former Astro Charlie Morton. Who do you like in that game tomorrow night?
Heart wants to go with the Rays, but I think the brain is going to wind up going with the Oakland A's. They're definitely a tough team, especially when you look at towards the top end of that lineup against anybody.
I like this. This is almost like Spreadhead's Christmas come early edition, because I'm going with Charlie Morton and the Rays here. It's the better matchup, I think, for the Astros, in my opinion. So you've got the A's advancing to play the Astros, and you've got the Brewers advancing to play the Dodgers. I'm going oppo like taco. Quickly to the two series that we already know about, Cards at Braves. Give me a winner. Not in game one, but for the whole series.
For the whole series, I'm going to go with the Atlanta Braves here. I feel like the Braves are a team that's been able to kind of like get that youth experience thing, that tag removed from them. I think they turn it around and be able to win in the NLDS over the Cards.
I like the Braves here as well. Home field advantage has something to do with it, and that hurts my Cardinals' heart a bit to have to tell you that. But I'm picking with my brain here and not my heart. All right, the other series that is known at this point, Twins at Yankees, potentially for the right to face the Astros in the ALCS. I'll let you lead off again.
I got to go with the New York Yankees here. It just feels like everything is going their way to where they are already kind of preparing the parade route in a few weeks' time. They're getting ready, and they know – I feel like that team knows that this is one of those opportunities where if you don't get it, it's going to wind up eating at you for a while.
This feels like a meeting of destiny between the Yankees and the Astros and the ALCS. I'm going to pick it as well, but I got to tell you, I'm not doing that with a lot of conviction. The Twins set a record for most homers in a season. They do have some star power at the top of their rotation, and they've won 8 of 10. Yanks lost 6 of 10, limping down the stretch a bit of the regular season. That's part of the reason the Astros ended up with the best record in the bigs. So I think we're going to have some phenomenal AL and NLDS series. I just can't wait for all the action. All right, on the other side of this break, time to throw some shade. A beer man doing some things that Michael Lewis never even dreamed of. That, plus a little Zion Williamson and J.J. Redick doing dookie things. We'll be right back. To Pete Son Johnston, this is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports. But feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Not a lot of debate on some of the items I'll share in this segment. One of them's just downright dastardly, and the other, well, it's pretty funny. I don't want to waste any time. Let me issue my daily PSA to everyone listening locally. No one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to their website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents, of course. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. Todd will take care of the installation of your patio covers and those gorgeous customizable screen rooms, while Alex, he'll put up your shades and awnings. Collectively, the team at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game in 2019. And all it takes to start, a trip to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
J.J. Redick is about winning. LSU fans that remember the 2006 matchup in Atlanta in March might disagree. Garrett Temple locked down the college basketball player of the year when he was at Duke. Here's the thing. The last 13 years since that ball game, Redick has been an NBA player. And all 13 seasons, he has been into the playoffs. We have discussed that during the show before. But what's hilarious is that earlier this week, yesterday in fact, during the Pelicans media day, you might have seen this. J.J. Redick aired it out. Here's exactly what he told rookie, number one overall pick, Zion Williamson, a fellow Dukie, about keeping that streak rolling.
My first conversation, real conversation with Zion was a couple weeks ago, and we got to chat for 20 minutes or so after one of the workouts. And the last thing I said to him, I said, look, man, don't f*** this up for me.
I didn't know if we'd catch the full soundbite where Zion comes in on the backside of that and basically can't stop kind of laughing and saying, yeah, it was a really good, lighthearted conversation. And then, well, J.J. dropped the hammer and the entire mood changed. If you heard the way JJ sounded there, I've seen the clip. He absolutely deadpanned it, and it's stinking hilarious. And so this cat, JJ Redick, comes in not just a great shooter from the outside. Guy does his own podcast, kind of artistically inclined, and he brings a little humor with him as well. Some strong words and possibly a little shade. Don't bleep this up for me, Zion. Clint, I'm going to transition from that story to one that I caught maybe about an hour ago. I mean, during the show, brother, I saw this. NBC News reporting a beer vendor has been arrested. This is pretty incredible. For allegedly charging a man $724 for two beers at a Dolphins game. Let that sink in. Nathaniel Collier, 33 years old, again, allegedly used a personal card reader and not a device that the stadium provided to vendors to job some guy at a 724 bones for two beers. And, of course, the running jokes have not stopped on Twitter since this story was released, right? I think the very first comment under the official story is that the real development here is that two people attended a Dolphins football game. I get it. That's hilarious. But, Clint, I have to get your reaction. The Cajuns have moved to family-friendly concession prices. Quite literally $2 for a domestic 16-ounce can. You want to go watch the worst team in the NFL play? It might cost you $724 for two pops.
That is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, it's not like the guy's got hard times. I mean, he's a Dolphins fan, let alone he's having to pay $700 for a beer. Dude's not having a great life right about now.
No. And his Dolphins, I don't think there are any prospects of getting a lot better anytime soon. But this guy, Kanye, I think he might have to do a little jail time over that. That, almost literally, highway robbery.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
First day of October, we've got this great just kind of confluence of sporting events, right? We're talking high school, college, pro football. Zion Williamson, J.J. Redick and company. We get a little NBA discussion there. I'll probably fit in some LSU basketball talk with our next guest, Cody Warsham, and then Major League Baseball. The regular season's done. The one-game wild card starts tonight. Again, it's the NL first. Clint, inexplicably, is picking the Brewers to win on the road and beat Mad Max and the Nats tonight in the nation's capital. Tomorrow night, of a lot more intrigue and interest for all the Astros fans. Will it be the A's or the Rays coming to Minute Maid Park beginning Friday afternoon and then game two Saturday evening? And Clint and I disagree on that one as well. I think the road team on the back of Charlie Morton can actually get there. And if you recall, Clint, I'm going to use this to bolster my argument, which probably means it won't happen, but I'm going to do it anyway. I've had Richard Justice on this show twice during the season. Once when we were out at Minute Maid and then a couple weeks back. And both times when I asked him about teams in the AL that might be able to get to the World Series, I said, you can't pick the Astros, you can't pick the Yankees. He picks the Rays every single time. He thinks they have what it takes, the way the roster is built. We're going to find out. Now, they've got an ace in Charlie Morton. Good news for Astros fans, Morton's going to be burnt after that game tomorrow night. You won't have to see him in Minute Maid either Friday or Saturday. Just something to think about. All right, we've had a lot of fun, and we got more coming your way. An interview with Cody Warsham when we return. And then from 6 to 7, the Wreckin' Rams take center stage. Matt McCullough and Acadiana High starting to trickle in. You love Wreckin' Rams football? Come out and celebrate them with us at Pete's on Johnston. We'll be right back in with more B2BS on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Back in for the final time in a busy 5 o'clock hour. We're having a blast at Pete's on Johnston, and within the next 15 minutes, we'll continue that blast. We're going to be on a roll. The Acadiana Wreckin' Rams are going to roll into Pete's. It's week four of our Prep Power Hour. Excited to have them, almost as excited to bring back our next guest. So let's get out now to the Artco Equipment Hotline, live from Baton Rouge. It's Cody Warsham, digital media reporter for LSU Sports. Cody, how goes it on the 1st of October?
Hey, Ben, doing well. Good to be on with you.
So what does a father of two and a busy man do in an LSU football bye week, especially when there are two bye weeks? What'd you do for the first one?
Yeah, so I took advantage of the first bye week, headed to Orange Beach. Spent a week with my toes in the sand and not a care in the world. So I'm now spending this week adjusting to returning back to reality. And hopefully by next week, I'll be back up and running and actually, like, doing stuff and being productive. For now, I'm just trying to readjust and try not to think about being back at the beach, which is very tempting to just go back and, you know, spend another week there. But I got some stuff to do, so I took advantage of the first bye week. Second bye week, I don't think it'll be quite beach weather. But it was a good week off.
And so Cody Warsham kind of getting back into game shape. In some ways, you could say LSU football has the luxury of doing the same. Utah State comes to town this weekend before a huge night date with the Florida Gators. I guess your synopsis of this Aggies team, Jordan Love at quarterback, a 27.5-point favorite. But still, there are ways, I think, certainly that Utah State will test LSU.
Yeah, it'll be a really good test for LSU's defense. We've seen that defense kind of struggle to find its identity early, I think. I think they've had some good moments, and they've done some good things, and you've seen some guys play well, like Derek Stingley, I think, has been excellent for LSU, and you've seen Jacob Phillips play pretty well. But there's other guys that are still trying to figure out their roles in this defense. So this Utah State team plays fast. They play really, really fast, and Love is, you know, potential first-round talent at quarterback. So it's going to be a great test. I don't think LSU's offense will have much trouble scoring points. They haven't had trouble scoring points against anybody. But it'll be a great test for LSU's defense. See if, you know, maybe Dave Aranda, who wasn't at the beach during the bye week, maybe he was up in his office. I'm sure he was scheming and trying to get these guys ready. And I think he'll have a plan in mind. And I think he'll hope that he'll see his guys grow and develop and get ready for those SEC games coming up.
Cody, I know it's only been a couple of years that you've been in this role, but what can you, I guess, speak to when it comes to Joe Burrow and everything that goes into publicizing a potential Heisman candidate? LSU kind of sort of went through that with Leonard Fournette, briefly with Pat Peterson as well, but your end and the staff over at LSU.
Well, Joe does pretty much most of it himself of what he's doing on Saturdays. I mean, he's been unbelievable with the way that he's running this offense. You know, he just makes the right decision almost every play. And when you combine that with the accuracy that he has, the athleticism, the knowledge that he has of the defenses and the offensive scheme, he's really carrying the bulk of the weight there. I mean, on our end, you know, from my end, it's almost difficult. He's almost making my life a little more difficult because he keeps playing so well every week. I'm trying to get some variety in what I'm writing about, and here's Joe Burrow breaking records every week, and I can't help but write about the guy. So, you know, he's doing most of the work there with the way that he's playing. You know what I really respect about Joe, though, is with all that stuff and all the attention that he's getting, he hasn't changed. You know, his head's down. He's working hard. He's in the playbook. He's in the schemes. He's in the film. He hasn't changed at all. So he's much more worried about, you know, the opposition safety and the coverages they're going to be running than what Heisman voters are thinking about. And I think that's the mindset you got to have. You can't pay attention to it. You know, let the publicity staff handle it, and you just go out there and play, and that's what he's doing.
Any chance, since you got back from the beach and you were around yesterday, you got to see Jamarcus Russell coming through the building?
You know, I haven't. I wasn't around the building yesterday. I haven't met Jamarcus yet, but he has been around a lot. You know, I did see him in the cafeteria not too long ago eating. He's been around quite a bit. There's been some stories going around. I guess I can share this story because I think I heard it on another podcast. But he went out there the other day. I think he was on the practice field, like, you know, when no one was really around, and one of the equipment guys was like, hey, I bet you can't, you know, hit the goalpost from the 50. And Jamarcus took one ball and one throw from the 50, and he hit the crossbar. And he said, double or nothing. And he did it again on the second throw. So he's still, you know, he's always been kind of a guy that's had this myth about him. That hasn't changed. He can still sling the ball as well as he ever could.
He is Cody Worsham. You can read his work, lsusports.net, and listen to his podcast, Hey Fightin' Podcast, at the same website. All right, do you ever get surprised, I guess, by the former player involvement since you just spoke to Jamarcus? I mean, anything else that you would elaborate on as far as the guys that, whether they're coming back to see Moffitt and get their swole on, they want to pass on some advice, they just want to watch things? I guess, what are your observations there?
Yeah, if you want to see former players, go in the training room. If you go in the training room, you're going to bump into a former player. They're going to be cutting it up with Jack Marucci or Shelly Mullenix or, you know, some of the longer tenured folks back there. And that's, you know, that's a place where guys go, and they spend so much of their careers in there, and they form strong bonds with their trainers. You know, it's almost like they're best friends away from the field. So, a guy that I saw pretty recently, Jeremy Hill, was in there working out, doing some like virtual reality workouts, trying to stay in shape and stay sharp. He looked great. I just ran into Garrett Brumfield, who's not that far removed from his career. He was here last year, but he's trying to stay in shape and wait for that opportunity. So, yeah, I mean, Coach O is real big on that. He's real big on welcoming former players back, keeping an open door for them. It's a huge emphasis. I mean, it's not even something that it's an emphasis. It's something that he preaches. And I think actually on Friday they have an open house for some former players for the new football ops facility. So, I mean, it's a conscious effort that they put into making those guys feel like they're part of a program because they're the foundations. They're the guys who built this, and Coach O is big on honoring that.
Cody, before we part ways, you and I have to talk LSU basketball. Between going overseas to Spain and then starting practice up here within the last week, what's this LSU basketball team been up to? Any buzz that you could share?
Yeah, they're just getting practice started. You know, I think the obvious buzz is with guys like Javonte Smart, Skylar Mays. They form the nucleus of this team. As they go, this team will go. But a guy that I keep hearing great things about, a guy that's looked really good when I've seen practice, is Charles Manning. He's a JUCO guy that comes in on the wing, can play 2 through 4 for you, depending on how big or small you want to go, can guard 1 through 4 for you, probably even could guard some fives if you needed to. He's a guy that is kind of the perfect glue guy. He's going to make shots. He's going to score. He's going to play defense. He's going to be in the right spot. He's going to make good decisions. I think it's going to be hard to keep him out of the starting lineup. I don't know where he plugs in, and there's so many other guys that you could see playing with Marlon Taylor coming back and Emmett Williams and Darius Days and all these guys that I expect to play a bunch. But, man, he's just such a good, solid player, almost a guy that I'd have a hard time keeping out of the starting lineup if I was Will Wade. So it's going to be a smaller team. It's going to be a faster team. But, you know, Emmett Williams are going to take a step forward. Darius Days are going to take a step forward. They're going to play more motion, more up-tempo. It's going to be, I think, a fun style of basketball to watch.
Anything else as far as LSU basketball is concerned? I know we're coming up on, like you said, the final descent toward the regular season, some non-conference games, some things that you even like with the conference schedule you would share with our listeners?
Yeah, you know, they've got that exhibition coming up at Louisiana Tech in November, so we'll get a good look at them. I think that's a fundraiser to help with Louisiana Tech and some of the damage that they had during the tornadoes earlier this year. You know, the schedule, I think Will Wade is kind of a master scheduler, so I think it's one of those schedules that maybe lacks marquee names in the non-conference, although that Texas game in the Big 12, SEC Big 12 Challenge will be really fun. But I think the home non-conference schedule maybe lacks the name prestige that people are looking for, but it's going to be a really good schedule that is going to offer LSU a nice balance of a challenging opponent, an opponent that's going to boost your RPI when that matters later in the season. But it's also teams that LSU should be able to make the mistakes you make in the early season and still win. So, yeah, you know, it's exciting, man. It's right around the corner. I'm looking forward to this team. I'm looking forward to seeing James Bishop, who they keep raving about as a freshman, a guy that I think is going to score a lot of points over the next 4 years. Looking forward to seeing the new look Emmett Williams and how his game has changed. There's a lot to look forward to with this basketball team.
Looking forward to more chats with you and listening to your podcast, Hey Fightin' Podcast, at lsusports.net. Cody, per the usual, thanks for taking the time. Hope to chat soon.
Yeah, Ben, thanks for having me.
He is Cody Warsham. Again, digital media reporter for LSU Sports. A lot of different spaces he's helping that department to explore that they never have before. So I'm enjoying keeping up with him. And look, we shared the same seat for a while. Not at the same time. That would be uncomfortable. You know what I mean. We both have been editors of Tiger Rag magazine, and that guy's doing some pretty large things. So great to have him on LSU football, LSU basketball, and then a little mix in of some of the alumni that are coming back and a Jamarcus Russell story just to give a little cherry on top. I'm seeing a cherry on top right now. Yeah, they've always got the shakes here at Pete's on Johnston. Don't sleep on them. I know. We get here, men especially. We're hungry. We're going to dive into the Pete's. Maybe you double down on the little Pete's. Happy hour has been going from 11 a.m. until, well, just about this moment at 6 p.m. But we're going to keep it happy on the other side. The Acadiana High Wrecking Rams, they're undefeated. And it's their prep power hour next. So don't go anywhere. This has been Bumper to Bumper Sports, talking all about Acadiana and Matt McCullough next on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now
let's get started.
Welcome into Pete's on Johnston. It's time for the Acadian High Wrecking Rams Prep Power Hour on 1037 The Game. Ben Love, and I'll be joined right out of the chute by the head coach of the Wrecking Rams. 4-0 to start the season. Matt McCullough is with us 2 years in a row, coach. Great to have you back.
Thank you for having me.
All right, give me a little bit of a rundown. When you have to start the season in a rivalry game, it's at the open-air Crow Dome. How does that maybe change the way that you prepare for a regular season?
Well, you got to be ready week one. You know, we play. Cam Crow is a good football team, and, of course, it's one of our biggest rivals. So it kind of gets your kids and the coaches amped up a little bit for week one.
28-6. It was a game that was fairly close. Through about two and a half quarters, your guys were able to really step on the gas toward the end of the game, especially on offense. How'd you do it?
We were able to make some plays later in the game. I didn't think we played bad in the first half. We just didn't finish a couple drives. And then Cam Crow's a good team. So we were able to make some plays and then kind of have a long drive to start the second half and get ahead and then we got a stop and made a big play. So I thought we did a pretty good job in the second half of that game.
Your quarterback, Keyonte Williams, how has he progressed into this 2019 season?
He's doing a good job of running the offense. You know, I thought late in the year last year he did a tremendous job of running the offense, but he's able to do everything we ask him as far as the option game, throwing the football and stuff, and he knows everything about the offense, so he does a good job of running the whole thing.
At a program like yours, as we're joined by Matt McCullough, live at Pizzo and Johnston, four state titles, right, since 2000, when you are used to winning at that clip, anything short of that, I understand, is a disappointment. But how did you use the way last postseason ended to fuel this year?
Well, you know, the goal always at Acadiana is to win every game we play, and then when you get to week 10, 11, 12, 13, and so on, is to try to make a run and get to the state championship. So we want to get back there. It's been a little while, and the goal throughout the whole season, of course, is to focus on the game we're playing that week. But the ultimate goal is to have a shot at the, late in the year to play for a state championship.
When you see guys like Lucky Brooks, Dylan Monette, how soon do you know? I mean, how young are these guys when you know, okay, they're ready for our system? And, I mean, they could be productive as they were as sophomores and juniors.
Yeah, those guys are just good players, you know, and as they go, they get better and better in our system. But you could tell when they're freshmen, they got a chance to be really good football players. So, of course, Dylan played a bunch as a freshman. So those guys are good football players in any system, and then now they've gotten to the point where they're really good in ours.
How young do they start learning this system? I mean, for those that are listening, they haven't been around it. How quickly do they get kind of comfortable with how you do what you do?
You know, it just depends on the kid. Sometimes it takes a little while, if offensive line-wise and running back-wise. But sometimes we got guys like Dylan that could come in and be able to play as a freshman. We've had some backs even now. We got some backs that are sophomores that are playing some. So sometimes it depends on the kid. Sometimes it takes a little longer, But it takes a little while longer, usually with the O-line, but they usually catch on.
Celebrating Acadiana High football all hour long. I mentioned the Cairn Crow opener. Wrecking Rams right now 4-0 in the regular season, according to Louisiana Sports Line. In the combined 5A poll, the number 5 team in that classification. And you got a big win in week 2 over another team that's thought of pretty highly. Ruston, 28-20. Take us through that game.
You know, I thought we played extremely well in the first half. You know, they scored after a penalty, after we got a stop on a fourth down with like a minute left in the half. I thought we played extremely well in the fourth quarter. We didn't play very well in the third quarter, and that's something that we've been working hard to make sure to play up four full quarters. You know, we made that game a little closer, I think, than it should have been. You know, they made a big play at the end of the half after a penalty, after we got a stop. But then we kind of came out of halftime and did not take advantage of some things and made some mental mistakes and let them get back in the game. We did do a good job late in the game in the fourth quarter of having a big drive to put them away, but we got to do a better job putting them away early.
Two straight home games. It was Ruston first, then it was LCA. Before we get to the ball game, what about the atmosphere? I think there were a lot of people from around Acadiana that were looking forward to the game. Just two very different programs at different stages of their development. What was that place like?
It was a good atmosphere. They had a bunch of people there. You know, it's a good – I mean, week three – game with that many people there. I think it was good for our kids to have that type of environment, because you're going to have that type of people when you get in the playoffs. And they're a good football team. I thought they played extremely hard on defense, and it was a good game until the fourth quarter.
Ultimately, what was the separation in the fourth quarter?
We were able to wear them down a little bit. You know, we had a chance to go up a little more in the first half, and we ran out of time, but we were able to wear them down, and we broke some runs late in the game. And our defense, I thought, played extremely well. You know, we besides like the first drive of the game, I think they only had like 50 or 60 yards in the game.
And so you start off district 3-5A play. It was on the road last week at the Sulphur Tours, 70-14 the final. Which is more impressive to you? You get more excited about that point total or holding a team to 14 or less?
Well, you know, defensively, You're gonna win a lot of games if you can hold people down. But, I mean, the goal offensively, too, is to score as many as we can. You know, we were excited about that because we've had a few games where we feel like we're real close and we don't quite get in the end zone or we get stopped by something. So, you know, that's the goal, to keep improving. So, you know, we weren't trying to score 70 points, of course. You know, we were trying to score as many as we can early, and then we got ahead, and they kind of threw a few interceptions late that allowed us to get some extra touchdowns.
So folks from around the area know the names on offense. We've talked about Williams, Monette, Brooks. Who are some of the defensive players that have been booing this team?
You know, we've been good at all levels. You know, Theos Figueroa was the player of the week last week. I think he had like 9 tackles and a couple sacks and a couple forced fumbles. But the D-line, you know, we've got some guys returning. We got 2 seniors in the middle, Jason Prejean, Zay Adams. We got Cameron George that's been playing really well for us. And we got 3 linebackers that are playing well, Paris, Bercier, and Arsenault. And then secondary-wise, we've got a couple sophomores and a couple older guys that are playing. Ian Muntz has played real well. And then Jeremiah Brown, LaTerrence Welch. So, you know, we got a bunch of guys that are playing real well.
Another few moments with the head coach at Acadiana High, Matt McCullough, with us at Pete's on Johnston. All right, I mentioned 3-5A play, and now you don't get to leave it for the rest of this regular season. Give me a preview. It's against Southside. Technically, it's a home game for the Sharks. We know that's going to be played at Turlings Catholic. You told me before the program, I think you had not a jamboree, but maybe a scrimmage there one time. Otherwise, you haven't been out to Rebel Stadium before.
No, this will be the first time I play a real game over there. We scrimmaged them last year to start the season, but this is the first time we've played at Turlings for a regular season game, at least the first time I have.
So what do you make out of the Southside Sharks so far? You've seen them on film. Josh Fontenot's group, what impresses you?
I think they do a good job. You know, offensively, the quarterback does a good job. They've got a couple of really good receivers. Tight end's a good player. They play extremely hard on defense. You know, they've won their first 3 games, and it was a game until late in the fourth quarter against Barb on the road in the first district game. So, you know, it's going to be another tough task. They're a good football team. They're a little different than us. They throw the ball around a lot. You know, I think they threw for 400 yards last week against Barb. So, you know, but they do a good job of coaching them, and I think they're a good team.
You think it gives you an advantage that your team plays the style that it does, not just in the playoffs, but even in this district? I could tell you, I had Karen Crow at Sam Houston a couple weeks ago. I mean, it's the polar opposite of what the Wrecking Rams want to do, right? They spread it out. I mean, they're throwing 50 to 55 times a game. Is your style an advantage?
Well, it's been an advantage for a while. You know, I mean, if you do it correctly and you're tough and you do it the way we do it, it's worked for a long time. So, I mean, it can be and I think it's been an advantage for Acadiana for a while.
How much do you find yourself looking around at the other teams in your district, even when you're playing your games against Karen Crow, Ruston, LCA? Pay any mind to it?
Yeah, we look at the scores and see how they're doing. And then, of course, in pre-district, I want all the teams in our district to win. The more teams that win, the more points we get in the power points and so on. But, you know, we want to see how each – it's weird because some teams match up different against other teams, but we're always looking to see how different teams did after the game.
One of my favorite conversations is talking to coaches, especially on the public school side, about the joys of scheduling in this split era we live in. Is it still a lot of fun for you at Acadiana High?
No, it's tough to schedule. It's hard to find games, you know. We were lucky to find 2 games in Lafayette this year, Karen Crow and Lafayette Christian, where we didn't have to travel. And then we found Ruston. But it's just hard every time that we get to the point where we got a schedule. It's hard to find games because it's a lot of people don't want to play just because of the type of offense we run, I think.
Coach, always fun to have you here. Best of luck against Southside throughout this season. Look forward to catching up with you again soon.
All right, thank you for having me.
It's Matt McCullough of the Acadiana High Wrecking Rams. We got more of the Rams coming at you on the other side of this break. We'll start to talk to some of these players, and I know Principal David Lejeune is going to join me as well. So stick with us. This is Acadiana High's Prep Power Hour, live from Pete's on Johnston on 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back out to Pete's on Johnston. The coach is through. The players, they're going to join me now. Ben Love with you on 103.7 The Game. I got seniors to the left of me, to the right of me. Let's introduce them. To my left, it's Jason Prejean Jr., senior defensive tackle for the Wrecking Rams. Jason, great to have you, man. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good.
We're going to turn you up. All right, let's see if we can get you. Jason, what's going on, man? How are you tonight?
Good. I'm doing good.
There he is. And to my right, he leads the offense. Keontae Williams, a senior at quarterback. Keontae, great to have you today.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Those levels are nice. All right, so now we got everybody where we need them. Keontae, I'm going to start with you. Tell me about practice today. Coach said it was about as hot as it's been in a long time. So you're excited to get over here and not have to practice in the heat for a little while?
Oh, definitely. It feels good in here. But, yeah, it was hot for majority of practice, but we had a couple cool fronts, and it was a pretty good practice overall.
You're getting ready for Southside. It's a ball game that'll be played at Turlings Catholic. What have you seen about that defense on film and some of the things you know you have to do?
They have a couple big guys up front. Their secondary could run a little bit. It'll be a good game.
We'll go to the other side. Jason, how about that offense for Southside? What impresses you about the way they like to play?
Quick passes. They have a good quarterback, and they have some decent receivers on the outside. They have a big tight end.
You know the name of their quarterback, right?
Dylan Monette.
Okay. All right. I didn't know if that was strange to y'all or not. So Dylan Monette's on both sides of the field. Jason, tell me about that Karen Crow game. I know it's a huge rivalry contest. So what's it like as you get ready for that, especially like the week of? I mean, what's going through y'all's mind as you prepare for that game?
War. We take that game serious every year. It's personal to a lot of us because bragging rights, as I should say. And we know a lot of guys at Karen Crow, too.
So. No doubt. We'll go back to the other side. Keontae, you got, I don't know about low-key famous, maybe like real famous, after that game at Ruston last year. Take me through that pass and the Hail Mary that won it up in North Louisiana.
Oh, it was a fun game. But, of course, all credit goes to Caleb. That's my right-hand man. He's real trustworthy. Probably got the best hands on the team.
Well, the game was kind of similar this year, right? I mean, it was played in the 20s. You guys were at home this time. You won 28-20. What'd you do right on offense? Not just you, but the team.
We were real focused in, especially in the first half. Third quarter, we came out kind of drowsy, I guess, because we figured we were up. The game was really almost over. And then fourth quarter, we battled back and had a big 8-minute drive, 18 plays. Yeah, it was really fourth quarter was real impressive.
Can you feel like the will going out of a defense when y'all do one of those types of drives?
Oh yeah, definitely. You see it. They don't want to get down in their stances. You know, they're tired. Their head is down. They're breathing hard. They start playing high. They get real lazy. It's the best.
Jason, how about you? When y'all are going up against these guys, especially like in fall camp in August, y'all get excited about that, or maybe not with that type of offense?
Yes, I get excited personally because I have a lot of friends on the offensive line. And we talk smack throughout the day, so it leads up to practice to make it more exciting.
Join now for another moment or two, Keontae Williams, quarterback for the Wrecking Rams, and defensive tackle Jason Prejean Jr. Jason, I'm going to give you the chance. You want to do it, man. We talked before the set. Best coach impression. You got to tell me who the coach is and then what it is, maybe like the little catchphrase, what they always say every single day.
I can do Coach McCullough.
Hit me.
Damn it, son!
Now you get loud. I like that. Hey, what was it like going up against LCA? Probably not as many bragging rights, right, as Karen Crow, but it's still a game a lot of people had a lot of interest in around this area.
LCA, it was a good game. I have a lot of friends that go there, so it was a good game to me. The Arrow is one of my best friends, so I like the game. I like playing them. Yeah, stuff like that.
We'll flip it back over to you, Keontae. 70 points against Sulphur. I know the defense helped out with interceptions late, but what was going so right on offense?
We had a great week. We wanted to stay out of the 20s. You know, we wanted to reach 50s. We didn't think we would touch 70, but defense played a big part. They put some numbers on the board as well, which isn't always expected. Even on special teams, you know, we had a score on that. So they helped us out a lot.
Tell me about your two stud running backs, Lucky Brooks, Dylan Monette, and how different they are with their style.
Just like watching from the stands, it's fun. It's fun to see. They make some great runs. Even though you're around them a lot, it's still amazing to see. They're really good.
The one, I don't know, look, I'm sure you're probably not afraid of anybody, Jason, but the one that's the more difficult to tackle in practice out of Lucky and Dylan.
Dylan. No doubt, Dylan.
What's it about his style that makes it difficult?
Elusive, fast, shifty.
All right, now we get to have some fun before we let y'all go. We do this with all the teams that come in. We'll let you both answer. We see if it's the same thing, basically. Who's the fastest player on this team?
Dylan.
No doubt about it.
No doubt.
Okay, no doubt. Who's the strongest player on this team?
Me. Either Zaya Adams or Jason Prater, yeah.
Okay. Is that O-line and D-line there, or is it both D-line?
D-line.
Both D-line. All right. Smartest player on the team.
Smartest in what?
You know what? That's fair. All right. Book smart and football smart.
Dale's figure.
Okay.
Booksmart's Cody Bergeron. Yeah.
You got a lot of folks right now that think it's them. You know that, right?
No.
And then it's just not. All right, I understand. The rest of this season that's coming up, it's all in your district. We talked about the Southside game already. I guess what are you hoping for in these playoffs besides winning games, getting back to the Dome, and doing what Acadiana High has done so many times? After the way last year ended, how do you get a different ending this year?
Oh, first of all, everybody staying healthy. We had a lot of players out last game, so we were already at a slight disadvantage. Just staying healthy, everybody staying focused in, and just keeping our heads no matter where we're playing.
Jason, I'll ask you, what's it like when you're coming out at Bill Dotson Stadium and you see the energy, you see the crowd? I mean, I'm sure you've been doing it for a number of years now, but what goes through kind of your veins when that happens?
I don't know. I think the feeling is hard to describe, but it's a feeling like no other.
Give me one more about your teammates. So we had some fun already, right? Who could probably put away the most groceries? Like the most prolific eater on this team?
Oh, Devin Ducey. And he wears a bun, so.
Like a full-out man bun?
Yeah, full-out man bun. Okay. It hangs and everything.
Okay, now I see it. That's impressive. All right, definitely the biggest eater, though.
Take it out.
There you go. Yes. Told you guys, we'd be in out about 5 minutes. Y'all did it. I appreciate it. Keontae.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks and good luck the rest of the season. Thank you. Jason, the same to you. First two players up, and they knew exactly what they needed to do. We'll have a lot more show coming at you. Again, Acadiana High, 4-0. Louisiana Sports Line right now has them at number 5 in Class 5A. Again, that's the combined rankings, right? So that's going to put in Catholic Baton Rouge. That's going to put in everybody else that will end up going toward that bracket in the playoffs. But this Wrecking Rams team certainly feels like they have what it takes to get back to the Superdome this year. And it would be hard to disagree. And so undefeated so far, a game at Southside. After that, it'll be Como and Nish. Those are both home games. Bill Dotson Stadium, Ted Davidson Field. And then they're going to be two on the road at Sam Houston, at Barb. Two very different stylistic teams to Acadiana. Both like to do it through the air. And then Lafayette High to end the season. That'll be the second Friday in November. So as always, a heck of a schedule for Acadiana High, and so far navigating it just fine. Matt McCullough and company undefeated, and I think there's an opportunity their best football is yet to come. But staying healthy is certainly going to be important, and I'm interested to see just how much this defense continues to take strides forward. Offensively, never really worry about Acadiana High. It's not just the style, it's the physicality, and players that have been within that system. They know exactly what they're doing, and you just heard Keontae say it. When they're on their game, it takes everybody out of theirs, and you kind of see the will come out of that defense a little bit. But the Wrecking Rams defense this year, giving up 6 at Karen Crow, 13 against the good LCA team, 14 on the road at Sulphur. That side of the football is where they continue to take the biggest strides. And so we still got about a half hour to go. I know we're going to speak with Principal David Lejeune. We'll see if we can get some more players as well as we're hanging out at Pete's on Johnston. And I know that they've recently, at Pete's, introduced the October MVP, and it's kind of fitting, frankly, of baseball season. Yeah, everybody gets excited about what's happening with high school football, but don't forget about the seventh inning stretch. It is a Farms all-beef hot dog, Mr. Mike's chili, cheddar cheese, diced with onions, and a hoagie roll. Served with chips, only $12. I saw one served earlier. It looks absolutely dynamite. All right, so we're going to take another break, and then we'll be right back in. Don't go anywhere. We're celebrating Acadiana High Wrecking Rams football. It is their prep power hour, and we're live at Pete's on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Back out to Pete's on Johnston. Still talking Acadiana High football and still having fun on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love, and I'll be joined in this segment by Acadiana High Principal David Lejeune. And look, you and I got to have some fun doing this last year at 4-0. Wrecking Ram's still having some fun.
Yeah, it's great. It's been a great start to the season. We played four really good games, three really good teams before we started district, so it's been very enjoyable.
You spent so much of your career on the sidelines, right, in press boxes and coaching. Have you fully adjusted yet to being able to just kind of enjoy Friday nights a little bit more? I know you've got a lot of responsibilities still, but is it very, very different?
Yes, yeah, it's very different, but it's still fun. I still get excited. I still enjoy going out to the stadium, of course. It's way different. The competitiveness in me comes out even on Friday nights and now. And the only thing I don't miss the summer workouts and the heat, but I still miss the game of football a great deal.
What's the most exciting part about home games at Bill Dotson Stadium?
Oh, it's just the community. You know, they're out there tailgating. They're there early. The stands are packed, and they're there. It's a great community support. They're out there to see the Wrecking Rams, and we usually put a great product on the field, and they appreciate it. And kids work hard, do a lot for the community, so the community gives back to us. You know, and of course, we have a great press box. You know, we have great people up there, good parents, good sponsors that provide the food and everything, and we appreciate all they do for us.
I think what was so intriguing, David, to a lot of people about that Week 3 game, LCA, right, two straight, state championships, a program that feels like it's building, and then Acadiana High, which has been kind of the gold standard in this area, maybe along with Notre Dame for a long, long time. How would you describe the history of this Acadiana High program and how you've gotten to that point?
Oh, I think it's phenomenal. It's first of all, it's stability. You know, it's been good for a long time. We've only had five head coaches in the history of the program, so that helps tremendously. Nothing's changed from the offense, you know, from the 1970s. So, and all of the players and all of the former players, all the former coaches, they still come back. And it just builds on the tradition every year. And it helps. The community support really helps. And the kids really appreciate it. And they work their tails off, you know, to be good, of course. But they also work hard to represent the community and the school. So that helps with our tradition. And it helps. It helps when you win.
Sure.
You know, that's always a good thing. And the state championships brought the community closer together. And, you know, and now, you know, every year they start the year with hopefully a chance to go to the Dome.
It's been a couple of years now that Matt McCullough has been leading this program. Certainly an inside hire, right? And
yes,
somebody
sir.
That everybody in the community knew. Why was that so important? And obviously it's paying dividends.
Yeah, we've never went outside of Acadiana High for a head coach. And he's there. He played there. The community knew him. And, of course, he was at the school, so he knew the offense. And it was just a no-brainer when we made the decision. We have a great coaching staff. They all rallied behind him. So, you know, it was just carried the tradition on of what we've been doing at Acadiana.
Talking with Principal David Lejeune. We're still live at Pete's on Johnston. Hey, shame on me. I meant to get to this with Coach earlier. We'll touch on it now. The first points from a co-ed student, a female student-athlete in the history of the program, and it happened in last week's 70-14 win at Sulphur. Shout-out to Kelsey Lachelet, who banged home a PAT in that game. That's pretty awesome stuff.
It was phenomenal. You know, she got an opportunity. She went out. She ran out there. I talked to her Monday. She said she was super nervous, you know, kind of miskicked the first one and hit the crossbar, but then she came back out and drilled the second one. So she was super excited. And the football team and also the people in the bleachers, you know, were super excited for her. You know,
yeah, give me what that was like, even on the road, the reaction to that moment.
Oh, it was really phenomenal because, you know, first of all, when she ran out there, you know, everybody got excited. And then when she missed the first one, you know, everybody was kind of disappointed. But then when she got a chance to go out the second time, you know, the crowd especially was super excited, and the kids, of course, that she had an opportunity to make that. Because if you have a chance to talk to the young lady, she's a super young lady, you know, and you root for her just because of who she is and her personality. And she plays soccer, so we've been watching her play, you know, and represent Acadiana for a while.
Coach McCullough may have been the better person to ask this question, but how did this idea come about? She came and said she wanted to try out or wanted to be a part of it. You guys went to her?
No, he's shaking his head. Yeah, she came to him, and she's been part of the program and goes out there and participates just like, you know, just like every other member of the team. And, you know, it's kind of weird talking to her in the hall because you get her perspective of it. You know, the other day she was kind of nervous that she didn't know what locker room, you know, that she was going to dress in. First road trip, big road trip.
Right.
So she was kind of nervous about that. I said, just go talk to Coach McCullough. You know, he'll have a place for you to dress. So it's kind of a learning experience for the whole program.
With your knowledge of the history of Acadiana High football, I want to get to some of the greatest players in program history. And it's easy to kind of rattle off some of the running backs, but I'll get you to start at that position. And I know there's an all-timer, I think, that's coming through the turnstiles as we speak.
As far as running backs?
Oh, yeah.
Well, of course, the name Allie Broussard comes to mind right away. I had a chance to coach against him, you know. Good football player, you know. And since I've been there, we've had some very good players, too, in the time that I've been there. You know, we had they call him Baby. We had Edward Cormier. And then we've had, you know, of course, Dylan and Lucky and with this group. And we had
Ziggy,
yeah. You know, and Larrell Green. And we had Jalen James. So we've had some pretty good running backs just in the 8 years I've been there. But if you look back on the history of them, you know, it goes back all the way like Junius Doral and players like that. We've had some very good players at Acadiana. You know, Coach George right here could probably rattle off a few more names. But Troy Jones, he said. Micah Eugene before I got there. So, you know, if you look on our wall in the coach's office by the locker room, you can see a lot of great players that have come through the school.
I got to cover Micah and Jai when they were coming through over in Baton Rouge at LSU. So I was going to ask about some other position than running back. I mean, some of the all-timers, again, that have come through and really helped to define this program, and especially the tough nature of it.
Yeah, I think when you think of Acadiana, you automatically think of offensive line and defensive line. Win a lot of games in the trenches, you know, so we've had some very good ones. You know, we had Brakeeton Mouton, of course, who was a tight end for us. And since then, we've had some very good linemen that have come through the program. You know, we had Claude George, who's his little brother Cameron plays for us. You know, he's a name that comes to mind. So we've, you know, and you can, if you look through and then coaches, you know, that have been here a long time can tell you, but we've had some very good players that have come through, you know, and of course Jacob Cotrera at linebacker is another one that, you know.
And he was honored, I believe, last year. Is that correct?
Yes, they put his name and stuff on the stadium. He's really been our only player that's played in the pros. So when you walk into the stadium, he has a poster and a plaque on the stadium wall.
We're coming down the stretch. David Lejeune, our guest. It's the Acadiana High Wrecking Rams Prep Power Hour. I feel like it was this time last year we were talking about the decision to name it Ted Davidson Field as well. And so 1 year in, I guess, I know he's retired, but his involvement, how much he still comes around and what you would say about everything he's done for this program.
Well, it's, you know, I mean, what can you say about, first of all, you know, he made 6 trips to the Superdome and win 4 of them, you know, in 14 years. And so that's an amazing feat just in itself. But, you know, he's still around the program. He comes to the games. He spends a lot of time the summer and the early fall. He spends in up north, you know, in the Minnesota area. He trains dogs, his dogs. So, but every time he gets an opportunity, he comes by, and you know, and he's always around. And of course, when you say Acadiana High, you just think of Ted Davidson. You know, he's just kind of a legend now that we have. You know, and then when you look up on the stadium, you see his name and his poster up on the stadium. So it's great to have him.
It's been great to have you here. A couple straight years we've done this. We'll take our final break, and then we'll come back in. Maybe get you to volunteer a couple more of these players. They love it when they get to talk on radio, don't they?
They do. They do. Look at them.
We got one hand up. Look,
yeah.
Already.
There's actually two of them. Look.
We got two
right here. Two seniors would like to visit. So
Keontae reminded me that when he's done TV, they prepare you a little bit for what's going to be said, and then they can also cut it, right? It's live radio, baby. There's nothing you can cut here. It just kind of all happens. But, David, thanks again for doing this.
Thank you for having us. Appreciate it.
You got it. We'll be right back in. One more go in the show. This is the Wrecking Rams Prep Power Hour, and we're live for Pete's on Johnston on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
You're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Now we're back out to Pete's on Johnston. A little false start on me. Ben Love back out here having fun on 103.7 The Game. Got a couple more senior offensive skill players that are going to join me. Julian Arsenault and Caleb Cavalier, a couple of guys that helped this offense run. Great to have you here. How's everybody tonight?
Great, man. Great.
Doing good.
So let's start with you being a brave man, Caleb. You just got your sandwich at Pete's. You've left it on the table. I think it says a good bit about the respect you've got from your teammates right now. I don't know how that's there.
Yeah, especially since all of our fat players are sitting right there. It's kind of dangerous for real because especially when right across from it, I'm keeping my eye on him the most. You know. Love you, boy. Love you too, bro.
Okay. We're going to see if that love stays sacred here for the next, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes while you're talking on the mic and the food is out there. All right, Caleb, I got with your quarterback earlier. I know this is last year talk, but bring me back to Keontae Williams finding you for a game-winning touchdown in Ruston and a play that ended up making national news. What was that like?
Yeah, it was crazy. You know, it lasted for a little while, you know, but we're just trying to play the next game, you know, trying to have an even better year than we did last year, you know, trying to make better plays than that, you know, all for a state championship.
Julian, we'll take it to you now. Give me your take on this offense and what it's like when you really kind of get inside that machine and you're working on it day by day with your teammates.
It's a fun offense. It's playing receiver. It's crazy because you don't get your opportunity as much as most other teams get. But when you get the opportunity, you want to make it as much as you can. As you see, Jamboree caught the 80-yard pass. It was a fun play, but it's very slim the chance that we get to do that. But it's fun to help my teammates in the trenches fight and battle.
How much fun is stalk blocking? I know it's an incredibly important part of what you do, man. But is it fun?
It's fun because you get to get physical with somebody and get to – it's like almost being a lineman on their offense. You get to be in their face most of the game, and it's a very fun experience.
People say that crackbacking has been made illegal. Yeah. You find a way when you can still. I know what it's like to play that position, but you got to be able to do it sometimes.
Yeah, it's we still find our little ways that we can figure out stuff. It's fun. It's fun to break apart defenses and find their gaps and weaknesses.
Is it hard to know, Caleb, where Dylan, Lucky, your quarterback is when they get running sometimes? Do you find yourself having to remember, okay, I got to re-engage with this block. They just cross field, now they're on my side.
Well, you know, we're taught to run downfield and don't look back. You know, don't turn around until the whistle is blown. Finish your block. Make sure the person's laying on their back or make sure you get in somebody's way. You know what I mean?
Favorite player on your own defense to block in practice or to go up against for whatever reason?
Jason Prejean. I feel like he gives me the best challenge out of everybody. And Zay Adams, too. He's pretty good.
Jason said he's the strongest person on the team. You good with that?
Yeah, I can block him.
Okay. That's not the same thing, but yeah, he's confident.
No. Yeah, he's definitely one of the strongest.
I like that. I like that. I'll get your perspective on that, Julian. So typically you're playing a little bit further removed than Caleb. So some of these DBs that you have to go up against on your own team.
I mean, we have a good set of DBs. Coach Sebo does a great job with them. So it's very fun going against those guys. But it is always fun to go against LT because he is a younger dude, but he's still learning a lot. And it's always fun to go against him because we're close friends.
I love the way that you described your touchdown in the Jamboree, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen often, but when it hits, you're open and it's fun.
Yeah.
Can you, like, keep it contained when that play comes into the huddle and you kind of know, oh, it's about to happen?
To be honest, when we were talking about it at halftime a lot, we were like, okay, Julian, this is your shot. And it really it gave me the shakes for a little bit, but I decided to calm my nerves, calm my heart, and do the game. We practiced it all week. We were ready for it.
So hold on. Rewind a second. They told you at halftime we're coming out, and then we're – so you didn't just get it, like, in the huddle.
No, I had a good solid 10 minutes to sink it in and get ready for it, and – I had to calm my heart and get ready for it because we practice it all week. Like I said, we always make sure we know what we're doing. We don't ever want to come out and be second-guessing ourselves. We want to be the best when we get on the field.
Got another couple minutes. Julian Arsenault and then Caleb Cavalier. My guest is we're live from Pete's on Johnston. It's kind of weird that district championships don't always mean as much as they used to, right, with the new way the power systems and all those points work. But how important is it to both of you guys? We'll start with you, Caleb, to get the best of everybody else in 3-5A.
Well, you know, you always want to be the best out of everybody that you're playing. And to us, it's pretty important, you know, because you always want to win the first three games. But and then it's a whole new season when you get to district. You know, you want to go 10-0, and in district you want to go 7-0. You know.
On your side, and again, Carrick Row used to be in the same district, yeah, right? But does it feel like that game sometimes means more than some of the others?
Yeah, that game definitely meant a lot to me. I had a lot of close family that went to Carrick Row. They played receiver, quarterback. They were big over there. It was very important to me to play there and show them that I'm here to play, and I'm here to show them that we're the best.
I'll get to both of you guys on this, but when you show up to an opposing stadium and then people see that script A that you got on right there, what do you think that they think of? What do you think comes to mind?
Personally, I think it's gonna, they think that it's going to be mostly just a good game, that it's about to be a war, that they're gonna, we're going to fight as hard as we can. We're going to play every play to the fullest, and they're going to be ready for it. They're not going to win. It's
Caleb,
plain and simple.
What do you think, man? What comes to mind when they see that record Rams A?
You know, same thing as Julian said. You know, we're there for business. You know, soon, like Coach Cheese always says, as soon as them gold hats show up, it's business. You know, every day's a holiday.
I like that one. All right, we got at least time for one more. What's the one punishment you know is coming? When individually you mess up at practice, your position grouping, the entire offense for you guys, what's the one punishment you know is coming that you dread?
I usually don't get them, but offense guys get them a lot is the GLPs, game-losing plays, or definitely getting yelled at, getting in your face. It's a very serious program. They will get in your face. They will tell you what you need to do and what you've done wrong.
Anything in particular for you, Caleb?
Well, you know, being a lineman, you definitely have a lot of people yelling at you at film on Saturday morning. You know, we haven't done them this year yet, but definitely the GLPs, they'll have you hurting at the end of the practice.
Yeah, they get you ready.
I hear a lot about one-man, 100-yard sled pushes for the O-linemen, too. Did I hear that right earlier?
Well, last year we did have to do that once. So that was probably my worst memory from high school football ever.
And the moral of the story is just don't lose games, right?
Don't blow an assignment.
Don't blow an assignment. I understand.
Don't be stupid.
And have a clue. That's what I'm told as well. Guys, this was fun. Julian and Caleb, thanks so much.
Thank you, man.
Best of luck to the rest of your season.
Thank you.
And this Friday night against Southside. We're just about out of time. So I got to thank everybody who came aboard. Yeah, that would be a couple of seniors. And we got two more here. We just talked with Julian and Caleb. Also want to thank head coach Matt McCullough and principal David Lejeune, and our host here at Pete's on Johnston. 4 weeks in the book for our Prep Power Hour, and Acadiana, undefeated top five team in the combined 5A rankings right now. They'll be at Southside this Friday night. So thanks again to Acadiana High. Guys, gals that came, enjoy your evening. For the famous Clint D back in the studio, my name is Ben Love, and this has been Acadiana High's Prep Power Hour on 103.7 The Game.